It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 381. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can email me questions and suggestions for future show topics. My email address is miketechshow@gmail.com. You can leave me a voicemail message. Got one voicemail for tonight. And the phone number is 240-949-2450, and that's Mike Tech Show, all one word, on Skype. Follow me on Facebook and Twitter, and that's facebook.com/Mike Tech Show and twitter.com/Mike Tech Show. Jam-packed show tonight. Like I said, I have the one voicemail. I have a ton of email that I have to catch up on. Of course, I have a couple quick consulting stories and some things that I want to share with you. So before we get started, with everyone working on the go and holding an impromptu meeting can be virtually impossible, but not anymore. With GoToMeeting by Citrix, you can host your meeting online from your computer while your attendees, they can join from any device, iPad, laptop, anywhere, any system, there's a client for GoToMeeting. And it's so easy to set up. And you can have unlimited meetings for one flat rate per month. You can use voice over IP. Everything's supported. It's a great service to hold meetings. And you can kick the tires and try it out free for 30 days. But you got to go to GoToMeeting.com and click on the link for try it free. There's a button, try it free. Click that and then enter the code podcast and you'll get a free 30-day trial. So that's GoToMeeting.com. Click on the try it free, enter the code podcast. First, if you have iOS 5 on any of your Apple devices, that includes your iPhone 3GS, iPhone 4, of course, the iPhone 4S, the new one, came with iOS 5, iPad 1, iPad 2. There's a bug that will deplete the battery life. And this has been a complaint in all the Apple forums, and it's been a problem. Well, this will help a little bit. The biggest part of the bug is the automatic detection of what time zone you're in. Now, if you are not traveling across time zones, then it's easy for you to just make this change and you can save yourself some, you know, some battery. So here's where you go. You go to settings, and then in settings, there's location services. So click location services, then move your finger up and go to the bottom, and at the very bottom, there is system services. Click system services, and now you can toggle different options on and off. Go to setting time zone and turn it off. If you are not traveling across different time zones where you need your phone to automatically adjust, it's a wasted feature anyway. So you turn that off, and then you will save a few battery cycles for your device. They intend to fix this on future release for an update for iOS 5, but I wanted to share that. It's not going to cure all of the battery problems, but it is going to help you. This is something that Apple has released and came out with, so this way it will be a big help. Now, my iPad never leaves the house, so there's a lot of features I can turn off. This week, I spent time on Monday with a client who's a graphic designer who has three iMacs, and I installed a network-attached storage device. But what was special about this network-attached storage is it works well in a Mac environment. Now, Synology is the company, and they have a lot of products and support all operating systems. But what makes this one product unique is its ability to act like a local drive for Time Machine to be able to back up. You need a local drive that needs to be specially formatted so you can automatically back up to it. And you just set it, forget it, and it just auto backs up. But it needs to look like a local drive. Well, this product that's a network attached storage, you can create a volume. You just easily just create a folder, literally. And then you tell it that folder is going to work with Time Machine. And so it presents itself out on the network, automatically showing up as a device on every Mac in the network. Very cool. I did a lot of homework and research in order to properly pick the right product. This product we bought from Amazon, and he got it the next day. So I'm going to have a link to it, and also the company Synology. Its management interface is phenomenal. It supports FTP, NSF, Windows, Mac, Linux, just everything. It's so easy to create users, to create shares. We got the version that has 4 1 terabyte drives, and it's RAID 5, and the thing is very, very small. So RAID 5 means that one of the drives will not be available to you, or at least the space representing one of the drives, because all of the data is striped across the four drives. So you only have 3 terabytes available of the four. So any one of those drives can fail at any time and you're still up and running. So it's for fault tolerance, and it gives you better performance. And it was just so easy to set up that this is going to be my NAS choice, because it works in so many different environments and it was so easy to manage and set up. That's what you want. Something that's simple, something that works, and is not expensive. It was only a little over $700 for a 4 terabyte solution. With all those features and all that performance, that was very, very good. That was Monday. I forget what day this week. I have a client that has special needs for backing up. They not only use Shadow Protect and we back up every day locally, but we got to get everything into the cloud offsite for disaster recovery. I have FINRA compliance to worry about, so no backup can ever be deleted. They have to keep all of the data that is backed up forever. One of the employees accidentally deleted the contents of a folder in their Outlook on Exchange Server. Now, they're living off the Exchange Server that's local, Small Business Server 2008. And Shadow Protect, if I was going to use that, which I could have, but I have to do a full disaster recovery. I have to go get another system or do it virtually and literally restore the whole information store. That's a lot of work. But with this software and their service, it's called Envelock. And I will have a link to the company. I was able to call them and they walked me through easily recovering their full contents of that folder, and it was a piece of cake. And to be able to do that, the user and the company was just ecstatic. And it just makes it worth it, whatever they're spending, for not only my services, but the services of the backup technologies that we have put in place. I never gave this company any props because I never did a restore. Everything seems to be working, but it's when you're faced with a problem, how easy is it? And I was kind of confused with the interface on restoring. How's tech support? Well, thumbs up. Tech support was 100%, and I give it a great recommendation. They are not a sponsor. I have nothing to gain from this. It's just a great service to add to your bag of recommendations, like we do with Carbonite and some of the other services that we like. Jungle Disk, we've mentioned in the past, and Mosey, and there's so many other places. Crash Plan. Well, this is another one, but it's a little more sophisticated, a little more expensive for bigger companies. and it's called Envelope. This is an email from one of my clients. It's Windows 7 Ultimate 64-bit. And as they're using the system, they are constantly getting the Windows help and support. It keeps popping up and it won't go away. And I had them check the F1 key is not stuck and there's nothing on it because that's a very popular solution. I did a little research today and could not find out. So if you get the Windows help and it's just constantly popping up, and then like today for an afternoon, it didn't. So when I was over there, of course, the doctor in the house, it didn't act up. So I'm trying to come up with, I know I need to be maybe more specific, but that's all I got. And I have a picture of the help message that's displayed, and it truly is a real Windows help screen. The system is clean. There is no viruses or spyware or malware on it because, you know, that's the first thing we want to check. It's just an annoyance, and how do we get rid of it? Like, I was almost hoping there was like a service for Windows help service or something that I could disable, but there's not. So if anybody knows of something similar to this, I'll take anything. Email me and I will try anything. I'm going to be over there this weekend. It's not life or death, not a catastrophe. So they can live with this annoyance until I can get time to solve it. So while I'm over there this weekend doing some work, I'm going to try a few things. It'd be nice to have some things to give a go. Give a listen to this voicemail.
Hi, Mike. This is Al from Pittsburgh. Uncle Al in the chat. I found the Windows repair tool that might help after a virus infection. It's called Windows Repair 1.5. It has a 5-step process, including links to download Malwarebytes, TDS Rootkit, and Panda Cloud Antivirus. It'll create a restore point and then give you a custom menu with tools like reset registry and file permissions, remove policies set by infections, and unhide non-system files. There's a review by a beta tester you can watch before you download. I'll email the link. Thank you, Mike.
Al, thank you so much. That sounds so dead on as to I know what I need and what we fought a couple weeks ago with a client in the post show. I worked on repairing a client and removing an infection, and removing the infection was easy. It was the post work that has to be done to clean up everything that the infection broke. And Al has just recommended a great utility that's dead on for all the options that you want in repairing after you clean the virus. So, or the infection, whatever you want to call it. Thank you. I am excited about trying that utility, and I'm going to add it to my bag. This is from Rennie, and it's about email contacts. And he says, "Hi, Mike. Have been enjoying your show for a couple of years now. Love your consulting stories because they are real-world stuff we run up against every day. Like many of your listeners, I am just an avid amateur providing tech support to family and friends, mostly successfully. One issue I have not been able to resolve, either for myself or others, is how best to save email contacts, usually in Outlook or Live Mail, and then mostly importantly, restore those contacts to a new Windows OS. You must do this every day, so I would love to hear your recommendations. It amazes me that saving a contacts folder from an existing install and pasting that same folder back to new install does not work. No, it doesn't. Is import-export the way to go? Yes, it is. If so, what format should be used? If you're moving from Outlook to Outlook, that's easy. Highlight the contacts folder. Go up and click File, Export. Export to a PST file. Do not give it a password. Let the folder stay and say and actually be named Contacts. Now, Outlook's going to want to save this file in a very obscure place. Change the destination directory to a directory that you know where it's at, to make it very easy. Call it contacts.pst. Once you save it, that's it. You have the contacts. Now you can close Outlook, copy that file, and then on the new system with their Outlook, you can import the contacts. But better than that, go find the original PST file, where it's located. In all the Outlooks, if you go to Tools, Account Settings, and take a look at the Data Files, you'll see Data Files tab. There will list all of the PSTs. These are the files that are holding all of their email, but it's also holding their contacts, their calendars. If they only want their contacts, great. Use that export feature. But know where the PST is located by saying open containing folders. So when you see the data files, they're buried in a profile on the system that's several directories deep. So if you say open the folder, you'll know, cut and paste, copy that path as to exactly where the files are. Very important that not just the contacts, but you need the NK2 file. And one of Kate's favorite sites, Neursoft, has a utility that I often talked about, which is NK2 view. What is that? That is when you start typing an email and you pick common emails that you're constantly, email addresses that you're sending emails to. What happens the next time, let's say you're typing to miketechshow@gmail.com and you send me a lot of email. Well, when you start typing M-I-K-E, it'll fill in miketechshow@gmail.com because you type that often. That's saved in all versions prior to Outlook 2010. You will be able to take that and save that information. Again, it's in another obscure place. So if you get the NK2 view, you can actually back that information up and restore it to another computer. And not only that, sometimes, and I really hate this, let's say you type the wrong email address and it gets returned. And the next time you're typing that person's name, the wrong address comes up because it remembers it. Well, NK2 view and edit allows you to actually get rid of those bad entries, the entries that you don't want to automatically come up. This takes care of Outlook. Windows Live Mail, I don't know. So we'll have to Google that, or if someone could compose an email or voicemail for me as to how to back up mail saved on Microsoft Live Mail, I would greatly appreciate that because I don't use Live Mail, but I do use Outlook. And I've often used the Outlook export import feature. It has been a great friend of mine in being able to convert people from one system to the other. But remember, grab the whole PST and you're going to get everything. Rennie, we're going to get back to you on the Windows Live Mail, but I hopefully helped your Outlook question. Recover deleted items from My Documents folder. And this is from Gina and in Central Florida. Thanks for all you do in helping everyone with your podcast. It truly helps me as an IT professional. I have a customer that deleted several Microsoft Access queries from the My Documents folder in error. I ran a few recovery programs and most files are there with the exception of the .mdb files. Any idea on how to recover these files? The PC is a laptop running Windows XP Service Pack 3 and is not in use now. Thanks again, Mike. Also, any chances of doing tips and tricks with Blackberries? I don't use a Blackberry anymore. So again, I'll put that out there to the listener base. If you are a Blackberry guru, hey, record me a, keep it under 5 minutes and record a voicemail with some tips and tricks. That would be pretty cool. MS Small Business in the chat says, in answer to the BlackBerry tip, get an Android. And my response is, get an iPhone. But I understand the love and attraction to the CrackBerry because I had that addiction. And when the BlackBerry was taken away, when I left the corporate world, my thumbs didn't know what to do. As I was, I was constantly typing with my thumbs. You get pretty good at typing with your thumbs when you have a BlackBerry. Send me some tips, and we'll put, a segment of a show for the BlackBerry. But let's get back to your recovery. I use a program called Restoration. Now, there's no difference for a .mdb file that if it was deleted, why you wouldn't be able to recover that. Unless, was it overwritten? And that's what I'm thinking here. There's something else going on. But the .mdb, it's just another file. And if it was deleted, why wouldn't it be available for any of the recovery utilities that you're looking at? Try Restoration. See if that works. But if anybody has any other tips, this kind of gets into, what are you doing for file recovery? And I know there's lots of paid programs out there. Of course, we like free first. So if there's free utilities that you're using, that would be great. And I can share them with everybody. But try that, and I'll put Restoration in the show notes. This is from Mark. HP Pro Curve Switches Caveat. And I completely agree with this and have done this exactly what Mark's going to talk about here. Hi, Mike. I am upgrading network switches for a client. The current switches are starting to be problematic, which are a couple of older D-Link 24-port fanless switches. I followed your recommendations to take a look at the HP ProCurve switches and was considering the HP 1810G24. They are excellent. That's what I have right here in my office. But my client has a need for more than 24 ports. So it seemed natural to bump it up to the 2510G-48 fanless model since it has 48 ports. Then I noticed a posting on the net comparing these. The 1824 is a nice fanless quiet switch requiring almost no maintenance. According to this forum, the fanless 2510G, well, at least the 48-port model, actually has 6 fans and is not noiseless, of course. Furthermore, the author was recommending stacking multiple fanless switches instead if you are installing this in a dusty environment. Incidentally, the first thing I had to do on this job was vacuum out 1/4 inch of fallen concrete dust. Wow. Consequently, I don't think the fan switch is a good idea in this case. I'm thinking of stacking 2 1810G24s, 24-port ProCurve switches instead. True, it will require 2 logins to check both switches, but I am concerned about the noise and dust, and I thought I would pass this along. Mark, thank you. And I wrote him back saying, I agree. I love the HP ProCurve line of switches. And I do have 3 or 4 clients where I've put exactly what he is doing, 2 24-port switches and stack them. And just put a copper cable between the two. So you have 1 gigabyte between the 2 switches. And that's fine for an environment where you got 30 or 40 people, but you need more than those 24 ports. I love that 24-port switch. It's quiet. I never have to log in and really do any maintenance to it, unless I'm going to create a VLAN or do something fancy. Who cares if there's 2 logins? You give each one a unique IP address, give it a change the default password and set that, and away you go. It's very easy. And then I always like to take the 2 end ports, port 24, and link them together to bridge the 2 switches. And then it's really acting like one switch with a gig connection between them. This is from Jeff, titled Network Tools and Stuff. I am writing to tell you about a tool called The Dude, And the link is here, and it's www.mikrotik.com/thedude.php. I wanted to let you know about this tool as I was listening to your show and went over some methods for documenting things to a customer. By the way, I've tried this utility out. It's very cool. I thought this might be a cool tool to mention. It takes a little tweaking to get to work, but once it's up and running, it does give very comprehensive network data and documentation to the user. It must run as a domain admin with full credentials to be most effective and to pull the most worthwhile data for you. It also lets you do port scans and other useful diagnostics. I enjoy your show and listen every chance I get. Thanks for all your efforts. Jeff, great little utility. Thank you. This utility, I put it on my domain controller here in the house, and it does work. It does require reading the setup, and it does require some tweaking, but once you do it, you do get a nice network diagram of your network. From Buyer Brown, I hope all is well with you. I got this email and wanted to know your thoughts on it. Hi there. I know you must be busy, but I had a quick question for you. Now, this is a question to Buyer Brown. My company has a domain registered with GoDaddy, and our email is set up with Yahoo Small Business. We want to migrate our email service to Google Apps. I know how to set up an account with Google Apps and change the MX records, but I was wondering, is there a way to transfer email history to Google Apps? For example, how can I transfer all my sent email and current inbox to appear in the Google Apps account? Since Yahoo Small Business offers POP3 forwarding, would this initiate the transfer of the inbox and sent items, or will I have to do something different? I know this is not your duty to help me, but if you could give me some guidance or point me in the right direction, I would appreciate it very much. Thanks in advance. I appreciate your time. And Buyer comes back. That was the question to Buyer. And he says, okay, this is Buyer speaking again. I do know of a trick where you use Outlook to hook up to Yahoo Small Business, then use Google Migration Tool to transfer from Outlook to Google. But I'm not sure that works anymore. Do you know of an easier way to migrate everything from Yahoo Small Business, including history or sent and received email, to Google Apps? Thank you, and hope you feel well, and God bless. Buyer, thank you. And I wrote Buyer back that I would actually talk about this, I think, a couple weeks ago, and I didn't get around to it. If you use Outlook as your email client, where does it matter where your service is? Your email's fine. If you're using POP, that's the best way to then easily change to Gmail, which is the Google Apps, and just you're just pointing your POP3 records. So all your email is still in Outlook. You don't got to migrate anything. You're just changing the MX records. Now, if you're living on the web for Yahoo Mail and you got to convert it all, now you may want to fire up Windows Live Mail, use POP, get all of your messages down. Then you can go change everything to Google Apps and have all your messages. Now, getting it back into Gmail, you got to use the Google Migration Tool. I don't know of any other way of doing it other than that. One of the things that you might want to consider is even using the IMAP protocol. And then if you're in Outlook, you can also export everything. Okay, let's say you don't have Outlook. Then use Thunderbird. Thunderbird's free, and it's a great email client, and you have the capabilities to import, export, save everything. So pick a client, and then now you can get all of your email down. Now migrate that back up to Gmail using the migration tool. I think that's, you hit on it, Buyer, the solution. If you use POP, you can get everything. Since Google Apps supports POP, they could just stay POP. But if they want to live in the cloud, there's no way you're going to be able to directly convert Yahoo to Google Apps. You're going to have to use some kind of a client like Thunderbird, like Outlook, like Windows Live Mail to host all of the email, and then you have that extra step of getting it back into the cloud. But if they're already in Outlook, slam dunk, you're already there. This is from Clark, and he says, I came across an email from Soft City. They gave a link to the steps to running Windows XP from a flash drive, and I thought you might be interested. And I'm going to put this link in the chat. And of course, this presumes that your system can boot from a flash drive, and I suspect many older systems cannot. Clark, thank you. And he says, sending large files via email. So I thought that you made that you recently made a reference to a previous show where you talked about sending large files via email. And, you know, I'm not sure. He searched the wiki and couldn't find it because I probably didn't put that in the show notes where it's easy to find. But it's called YouSendIt. And that's a service that I often recommend. It's free and allows you to send big messages. Now, I've mentioned that probably a couple times in different past shows. I'm not sure which show that is, Clark, but thanks for the emails and hope that helps you. This is from DC, and he says, I just read your instructions on how to set up the home network step by step. I remember doing a show a long time ago on that. And he says, I like the pictures and instructions, but the PDF file, I can't download the registry patch. Could you please send me or put it on your website? DC, I need the show number that you're referencing. And if you are looking for a link or a file to a show that I've talked about in the past and you navigate to that show and you can't download it, let me know what show number it is because I have all of those stored locally and I could easily send you that file to that registry. Hack, I know, is a very small file. DC, let me know what show that is. If I can find it, I will absolutely send it to you. This is from Hilton from Chesapeake, Virginia. And he says, this is the Android version of Siri. There are a couple of decent apps for Android that have Siri-type capabilities. Siri is the natural language interface that came out with the iPhone 4S, which I believe there was an outage today with being able to use Siri. Anyway, one is called Speak to It Assistant, and the other is Voice Actions. Well, now it's called Genie. Speak to It gives you an avatar to look at and customize and feels better, but it is clear and it doesn't have the back end to answer questions. Voice Actions just gives you a microphone icon, which can be confusing at times, but it works nearly as well. Both are nowhere near as finished as Siri. They are good at standard things like setting reminders or searching the internet or sending a text, but if you ask it a question like in the Siri ads, they both fail. They aren't ready yet. Speak to It especially sends a lot of time telling you things like, I may know more about that in the future. Ask me again later. Still love the show, Hilton. Hilton, thank you. Now, this is from Kate, and she says, I'm not sure if anyone else is seeing this or not, but I think it's worth mentioning. I've set up 3 HP Pavilion computers for 3 different people in the last month, and all of them had system restore disabled. I'm not sure why HP would do this, and I enabled it and set a reasonable amount of space. There is a good, clear, short tutorial here, and I have the link. I discovered this while using PC Decrapifier. In the course of setting up the computers, there's an option there to set a restore point, and the program complained that system restore was disabled. This makes no sense to me. Windows 7's ability to restore a previous version depends on a system restore point. Why would system restore be turned off by default? I have no earthly idea. It should not be disabled. Or what am I missing? Thanks, Mike. As always, I appreciate all the good work you do. Kate, thank you for alerting me to that. And everyone, I don't know why they would disable that, because that's a feature you want, especially with all the different Windows system upgrades. And that's one of the nice things I like with Windows 7. The minute the upgrade's ready to start any kind of an update, it creates a system restore point, which is what you want. And that has saved me several times being able to go back because, you know, a bad update or a bad driver was installed. This is from Shane. Great show. I try to listen as much as possible and thought you might like to know about Heron's. I used this a while ago. Heron's is an ultimate boot CD collection. I know I've mentioned that in the past from previous emails, but I am going to link that again. Sort of like the ultimate boot CD. This is from Kate, and this was really personal to me, but I'm going to share it with everybody. It's a link of a problem that I have. All of my old shows that have links that are links to the Mike Tech Show, and if I want to change that to MikeNation.net, how about a utility that will go through and search and replace all of those links? And this is for WordPress, which is what I use. And she sent me a great link to this, and it's how to update URLs when moving your WordPress site. If you run into this or need this, this is a nice service to be able to take advantage of, this website. This email is from Bradley. I have a Vista-loaded computer. The built-in NIC will connect to the router, but will not pull an IP address. I pinged loopback and didn't get a reply. I figured the NIC was bad. I then installed an old PCI NIC I had, and the same thing happened. I then thought it may be a virus or malware. I ran Super Anti Spyware, Malware Bytes, and Viper Rescue. The trio found over 1,500 infestations, but still, neither NIC will pull an IP address and connect to the network. I disabled Windows Firewall and still nothing. Norton is installed, but I didn't disable Norton. See, we know where this is going, right? This is a customer's business computer, and I need a quick fix. Any idea? Thanks in advance. I quickly replied, and I said, did you test the network connection with another system, like a laptop? Temporarily disable Norton just to test. Try another network cable or patch to a different port on the switch. These were my recommendations. He writes back, I tried the built-in NIC in two different locations, two separate network cables and routers. One was at work and the second was at home. I will try disabling Norton. Today, surprise, surprise, Bradley wrote back, it was Norton. I removed it and now the computer connects to the internet. I loaded MS Security Essentials. Thanks, Bradley. That's great. And I'm glad that worked out. This next email is from Steve. Mike, love your show. Hope you are doing good. I do some server work for the local school. We have built a network that has about 15 computers in one building and about 14 in another building running off of two servers and one modem with Windstream as a provider. There was a problem with the service, so my customer called them and it was the modem has burned up. They said that there were too many computers on it. Could you let me know if you think that is too many computers? Thanks again. Now, I asked some questions, and I said, I've never heard of a case where too many computers are burning out a router. What is the exact make and model of the router? Because I want to check what the capacity is, but there's no way. I mean, even the lowest-end router could handle that many. Is the room properly ventilated? Do you have, you know, ventilation around the router? And where is it located? What is the temperature around the equipment? You know, do they have proper cooling? Is it too hot? Because, I mean, certainly equipment can burn up if it overheats and it's getting too hot in the room. Not too many computers connecting. He writes back, I've never heard of that either. The equipment is well ventilated, and I feel they're trying to put the blame on us. I agree. We built the system 3 years ago, and there wasn't any problems till now. I don't know what the model is. I got to look at it tomorrow, and I can let you know. put a new modem in, and they have new computers, and they wanted me to replace the old ones, but that's not because of this. Thanks again. Steve's going to let me know some of the information, and we'll do some further research. That is the last email. It is November. This is the time to do your Christmas shopping and get ahead of the game and get it all done. You're going to be buying a lot from Amazon. Use my Amazon links, amazon.mikenation.net, miketechshow.com/Amazon, the big link on the left-hand side of my website, Amazon. Any friend, relative, this is the time that you want to buy. This is where I get my biggest commissions. Where I make the most money is Christmas time. And it's you using my Amazon link, and it's these next couple months that make the whole year for me and why I have an affiliate with Amazon. So please make it so. Make it happen. Use that because you're helping support the show. And it's those actions support the show greater than anything else you could do, any possible sponsor or other affiliate I can have. It's my Amazon affiliation that really helps me. And I greatly appreciate all of your help, all of your support. Thank you so much. And with that, I have no music. I will try to get some music for next week, but I've had no time to do any research and trying to get some music to put in the show. So with that, I will see you same time, same channel next week. Bye-bye, everybody.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.